Welcome to the Dribble Podcast, your weekly fix of all things Perth Wildcats and Aussie basketball, presented by Perth Now.
Hello and welcome to the Dribble Podcast, where we chat for the final time this calendar year ahead of a monster weekend for the Perth Wildcats. My name's Chris Robinson from Perth Now in the West. And before we welcome in our special guest for today, the man alongside me every week, Perth Wildcats vice-captain and three-time NBL champ, Greg Heyer. How are you, Greg?
Oh, I'm sensational. It's obviously a little bit sad. It's obviously the last show of the year.
It is.
Heading into the best time of the year. I mean, obviously our viewers and listeners will get to see.
You've got some Christmas apparel on.
Yes.
Quite striking.
Jesse Wagstaff and myself have our annual Christmas videos. The Perth Wildcats media staff supplied Christmas shirts, which to me I was quite pleased about because, I am the biggest fan of Christmas, Santa. Someone just asked us if Santa was real. Jeez. Are you kidding?
And the look on Greg's face when he was asked that question.
I mean, that should be the biggest question of today's show. Is Rudolph considered? should he be considered Santa's reindeer?
I never knew this was an argument. Yeah.
There's eight reindeers, and then he came in as a substitute. But officially, he isn't actually.
So did he sub someone out, or was he just added?
No, he's added because obviously the night time, I couldn't see, so he's.
Yeah, but did someone lose their job because
of that? No, he just came in and got all the highlights, got his own book and song about him. But officially, not a reindeer. Unfortunately. But
yeah, he went from blue collar to Hollywood pretty fast, did Rudolph.
He went from Greg Heyer to Bryce Cotton.
We'll welcome in our special guest off the top. We've talked about him on the show a fair bit this season, a sneaky MVP candidate.
It basically is the Nick Kaye show.
Yeah, one of our favourites. He's gone under the radar nationally, but certainly not by Perth Wildcats fans for all the little things and a lot of the big things that he's done this season. Nick Kaye, thanks so much for joining the podcast and welcome.
Yeah, cheers, guys. Really glad I can be here with you.
I know you're all about the team, Nick, but do you see yourself as a sneaky MVP candidate? Do you buy into any of that at all, or does that not interest you in the slightest?
Not really. I'm just on the Bryce Cotton bandwagon, so Bryce Cotton MVP, really.
Why do you think you've been able to take your play to the next level? I mean, you've been no slouch in this league for a while now, but do you feel like you've gone up a notch this season, and why do you think you've been able to sort of blend in so quickly and so well to this Wildcats team?
Just loving the group of guys. Having guys like Nelly and Trev and the coaching staff, learning a lot from them, and then having guys around the floor like Bryce, Trico, Greg and that, who stretch the floor.
If I didn't say my name, I'd be upset.
Good shout out. And then just guys like that draw so much attention and really kind of just let me do what I'm good at, like offensive rebound, stuff like that, and just having them there has really made life a lot easier.
Has the adjustment been easier or harder than expected coming to obviously a really small market team in Illawarra and Townsville before that, and then coming to Perth, the bright lights on at RAC Arena? Has that been tough? Has it been easier than it expected?
It's been good. That's probably the best way to put it. I'm loving playing in front of the Perth crowd and the fans. They're so supportive and they get behind you all the time, cheering, and gives you that hype every time you go out on that court. But the transition's been... it's been pretty smooth, actually. We've had a good run so far, so it's tough to complain about anything, and hopefully we can keep it going.
We obviously talk about that transition. I think a big part of that is Nick's budding bromance with roommate Mitch Norton. Talk to us about that in terms of, there's obviously a lot of discussion. I'm sure you get annoyed by it, hearing that you can't play anywhere without Mitch, but... has that been obviously helping out the transition, having your best mate and I guess the point guard of the team, the guy that you're setting screens for, and getting open? Has that really helped out the transition as well?
Yeah, I've always found it a lot easier if you've got a good relationship with your point guard because you set screens for him, he gets open, he gives you the ball, you get some layups. So always having that relationship with the point guard's really good, and I think I've been lucky to have Norto there, and he does a great job of getting you open, and I'm going to keep setting screens because he does. So it's a good little 1-2 combo right there.
And what about the man next to you in terms of welcoming the new guys onto this roster, yourself, Mitch, some of the imports? What is it like? Because Greg's obviously been there for a while with Damo and Jesse, and there's sort of an established core there. How welcoming has that core been for you guys? How much has that helped the adjustment?
I don't want to hype him up too much. But,
no, you don't. We want the opposite. We want you to sell him out a little bit.
No, I think probably the biggest thing I noticed, and it was the day I signed, I had 10 guys message me saying, congrats for signing, really glad we could have you here and stuff. And just that that feeling of being welcomed into a group so quickly and so easily, it was huge for us. And then getting here, seeing the leadership and the commitment every day at training, every day so tough on the court, and these guys push every day to get better and better, and it's great to be out there with them, and that's why we're 10-2 or 11-2 right now.
We'll talk about, I mean, we definitely don't want to slander Illawarra and Townsville, but what have you found as a stark contrast, whether that's playing styles, training, professionalism? I mean, we've discussed it. I mean, you had one massage last year in Illawarra, and you get two a week here at Wildcat. So you talk about that, and that's obviously just financial reasons. But what have you found as a huge difference in terms of even fan bases? Are they, you know, more engaging? Are they can get on you? But what's the stark contrast you've seen even from Townsville to Illawarra to the Wildcats now?
I mean, I love my time at both those places, yeah. But coming here, professionalism's on another level, and yeah, as you said, that's just a financial thing. But at the same time, I think one of the big things is just on court, that everyday grind of training. It's so physical out there, and every possession you crash in the old glass instead of maybe taking a day off here or there just to feel better about yourself or anything. But it's really that physicality and stuff that you do day in, day out, that when you get to the games, you know you're ready, you know you're prepped, and you're going out there fighting for the guys because you work so hard against them all week.
And taking it back now as well, obviously you're a proud Tamworth boy, and we've been fortunate enough to meet your Grams, who's come across to Perth and all that sort of stuff. But talk to us about your sort of journey. You know, you went to a proud school with Jesse Wack, well, not alongside, but same school as Jesse Wack's up, but did you go New South Wales country and then that sort of transition? Did you, as a 17-year-old guy playing country music, were you thinking, hopefully I'm going to be playing NBL or what?
Yeah, as I was sitting at home on my banjo, I was thinking, you know, this is good, but it's just not for me. So, didn't really get into the New South Country stuff too early. Yep. Got a couple of late call-ups, top age 18s and 20s, and fortunate enough to go down to Sydney for a year, finished year 12 down there, and then went to Metro State, yep, where obviously Jesse went, and loved my time there. And it's kind of just, a lot of things have fallen into place since then, but I think it's just those work habits that gained from doing college for those 4 years and day in, day out grind that's really helped me today.
What do you, I mean, you're a feature of the Boomer squads now and consistent. I mean, we talk about MVP standard, but I'd say you've been arguably one of the most consistent Boomer threat, you know, players in the whole qualification periods. Is the ambition to NBL, Europe, NBA, what is it? I mean, obviously, Wildcat fans will be saying, what are you doing here? But, you know, what is the ambition? Are you trying to, you know, get to a higher level? Are you content? Or, you know, obviously the World Cup is a goal. I don't actually think it's an unreasonable goal. But, yeah, what is it for the Nikkei?
At this stage, obviously the championship's a huge thing, yeah, for us, and that's the number one. But after that, love to give Europe a crack in the, yep, off-season, see if I do that, see if I enjoy it, and yeah, what the culture and stuff's like over there. And then World Cup, it's a huge challenge, and there's so many great players, but if I could get into that little camp and, yeah, then just push for a spot, you're going up against guys that are so good, like that have been to the Olympics and stuff, but just to compete against those guys and see what I've got, that's my goal.
Is it strange coming, especially with the international breaks in the midst of the season, is it kind of strange going up against an Andre Lamanis Brisbane team and then playing for him days after that and then playing alongside guys that you're going to face days later? Do you try and not give stuff away? I mean, is it a little bit strange in that regard?
It is a weird transition. Yeah, you play someone one day and then, yeah, 2 days later you're on the same team as them. Saying that, I think my first year, I pretty much didn't talk to many guys around the league because it was very, oh, my team, we got to win. But yeah, now being in this group, you build those relationships and stuff, and it's always good to go to a different town and play against them and then have a chat with them after the game and stuff now. So that's a different aspect of it, but yeah, really enjoying that part now.
Taking you back to that Tamworth question, legit question, did you play any sort of music growing up? Because a lot of people associate Tamworth with the home of country music in Australia. Do you have any sort of musical talent or no?
Nah, I wish I did. I blame mum and dad for that. But I think, yeah, mum got all the musical talent and left me with nothing. So love music, love listening to it and stuff, but put an instrument in my hand, I wouldn't know what to do with it.
Okay, and another question I have, as far as a nickname for you, do you have anything that the Red Army can
he
go
has
with?
One he hates, then we won't say it. But
okay.
Yeah, that one.
Okay. Do you have anything else that's been with you as juniors, or have you even NK, or do you anything?
Nah, not really. It's
really?
Just,
you've gone through your whole life without having a nickname?
Pretty much. I mean, Nick K is pretty simple. It's very, very short and condensed. So.
It almost sounds like the term nickname. So.
Yeah.
I've got to ask you guys about Bryce, our regular Bryce Cotton. How is he doing update? I presume he trained with you guys this morning.
Fine.
How's the thumb? You guys been looking after it?
It's no longer an issue, I don't think, anyway. I mean, we obviously saw it start of the game. He was a bit apprehensive, I think, you know, just a bit of a swipe at the ball or just to get rebounds. You could see him sort of only going up with one hand. But I think it was obviously huge for him, just even doesn't make any shots. I mean, I don't think he scored in the first quarter and was pretty limited in the first half, and then obviously went gangbusters in the second. But I think once he missed his first three throw, and you could sort of see him just going like, what's going on? And then once he made it, it sort of was a bit funny, sort of the floodgates opened. But he's been fine. And I was even wondering, I thought maybe because it's, well, it is Bryce, and it's, as Damon put it, it's the most valuable thumb in Australia at the moment. But to be honest, I thought, maybe he would be on limited restricted duties just to make sure it doesn't go. But Bryce is one of the toughest guys, you know, we play against. That's the beauty of this team, like, as Nick says. And unfortunately, as a vet, like, if you don't pull your weight every single day, you get found out. And so training's brutal, and he's been, he's there. He's taken no steps back and no days off. You'd love for him to actually have some time off just to rest, but no, he's been back, so he'll be fine. And I'm sure he's eagerly anticipating a pretty big matchup. Him and Kev had some pretty, good games against each other. Kev's had some really good battles with him too, so I know he'll be looking forward to tomorrow night.
Did you guys adjust your high five policy when it comes to Bryce? It was noted on Twitter, I think, during the week. Was there just a bit of like
It was literally like high one. So it was a bit weird. Like last year, Bryce used to have this thing and I had hit a couple of threes at training, and he'd like just give me like one finger, and it was like you actually really had to concentrate because if you're running around and like trying to like give one finger to each other,
it's not a big target time.
So then Bryce obviously straight away from the get go in the very first like introductory, he went the wrong hand, or like the different opposite hand, and then from the whole game it sort of became a little bit of a comical thing. So I think it will be sticking. Like, it's one of those things that the guys get around, and I think it'll be constant throughout the season now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, massive game tomorrow night. A massive weekend for you guys, as I said off the top. Sydney Kings tomorrow night, Friday at RSC Arena in front of a massive crowd, and then a really big road assignment against Melbourne.
Sure.
On Monday. Angus Brandt has stoked the fire somewhat this morning on Tab Radio with some comments about Andrew Bogut. Let me start off the top by saying we love this. The last thing we want to do is take personality away from players.
Sure.
We love when players show some personality, and this is all in good spirit, all in good fun. Angus Brandt's quotes as follows about Andrew Bogut. Just the way he acts on social media, he's meant to be the face of the league this year and a role model for so many young kids still, but he sort of carries on like a bit of a pork chop sometimes on social media, and maybe carries himself in a way that I don't particularly agree with sometimes, but on court I still think he's a really great player. So obviously these comments have gained a little bit of traction throughout the league, stoking the fire a little bit. Andrew Bogut replying on Twitter, and I'll quote that, "He does things I don't agree with equals he is a pork chop, sound logic." So a bit of sarcasm from Pogues on Twitter. Guys, what do you feel about this? As I say, I love the fact that Angus is speaking his mind here. I don't think he's meaning any disrespect. Do you like the fact that this is sort of stoking the fire in the matchup ahead of tomorrow night?
I don't know. I mean, he's a bit of a beast, so I sort of try and keep him as placid as he can.
But so is Angus, though.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I think the biggest thing, you look at it, it's a bit of context. I mean, you could get a soundbite from everyone's single interview. You know, there's been a few times I've said something and I thought, oh, if they trim that, you know, I might be calling up Trevor apologising.
It's important to look at the whole bunch of quotes rather than isolating Pork Chop and just going with that.
Yeah, no doubt. But I think, yeah, look, I mean, one, yeah, you don't want to silence guys and being robotic and getting the general cliches that you get. And to be honest, if Bogut thought everyone agreed with his views in social media, he would be delusional. So don't trim that up as well, that second clip. But no, look, I think, yeah, I mean, you can agree he's arguably one of the best, if not behind Bryce, the second best player in the league and all that. But social media wise, he's very opinionated, and some things I agree with, some things I disagree with. So and that's each their own, and Gus can say that. And fortunately for him, I'm sure there'll be a shoulder straight through his chest in the first post up, and they'll be battling each other. But he can hold his weight, and good on him.
That's right. I'm sure he'd be expecting that anyway. Nick, was there any sort of trash talk from Bogues when you guys played him last week? Is he a talker on court, or does he just enforce himself physically? What's he like to go up against?
He's a beast. He definitely very physical out there and stuff. Doesn't talk too much rubbish out there and stuff, but I think the big thing is, Greg was saying, it's part of the context of it and stuff.
Of course.
I can't wait to see Gus and Bogues go at it now, because they're not going to hold back. And I mean, last time Gus went full out, it was 20 boards and 15 points. So I can't wait to see these two go at it on Friday, and hopefully we'll see Gus at his best for it.
Absolutely. A lot of this has arisen from Bogut's actions, where he sort of crashed the impromptu huddle in last week's game. Trev was sort of asked about it. Trev was obviously fined $500 for sort of shoving Bogues away a little bit. Have you guys sort of thought about, as a team, if that happens again, what is the best response when someone's being a bit of a pest like that and just trying to stir something? What is it, verbal? Is it going to the refs? Is it physical? What, Greg, if you had been in that huddle, how you would have played it out?
I definitely would have. I'm happy, because I would have made sure we got a fine as well for laying the hands on the big fella. Look, we didn't even have a discussion regarding it. Like, I mean, it's in the legal parameters of the game. It wasn't a timeout, so Berg has done it. He's pretty smart, and one, he's ballsy. Like, that's him. I don't think any player across the league would do that. I couldn't only imagine if I went into Dean Vickerman's, Andrew Gaze's huddle, like, what would happen. I mean, you'd definitely get the exact same response. Or if I went to Gaze's huddle, there's a fair chance Bogut would have been cleaning me up too. So, yeah, there was no discussions. I mean, you do it. Trev's a fiery character. You love him for it. Unfortunately, he gets smashed with a $500 fine, and that's not pleasing come this point of the year. So, it's tough. I mean, hopefully we're just not in a situation where we need to be doing timeouts and all that sort of stuff. But, hey, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I looked at it even during the game. I sort of was like, geez, that was a bit strange. I haven't ever seen that. But didn't even think of one moment. I was like, oh, any overreaction. You know, I knew it was going to be, it's the most central figure in the NBL, you know, and a coach, you know, doing stuff like, you look at their response, like, they were like talking crap and smiling in the huddle. So you obviously saw their response to each other about it. But
yeah, a lot of experience on the national team between those two.
So it's a bit of, and that's the thing, you got to look at that as well when you look at, they've got a prior relationship. That's the thing, like, they can do that. I mean, you see it all the time in games, like, even when players, I've had a couple of times where I've had, you know, maybe a run-in with Kevin White, or you go for a rebound and you don't know who the guy is, and then you sort of look and then you're like, oh, that's a guy I actually really like, he's a really good mate, and you've had a bit of a chin wag off the court, and we'll catch up after the game. You're like, oh, that was a bit weird. Like, even JK, you know, like, he can sort of talk a little bit of crap. So I think it's a bit funny, and even social media, like, you look at it and people are in an uproar. It's that common, like, trait, people hate the Wildcats, love them or hate them, and, you know, like, imagine if Nick Kay did the same thing. Like, people would be like, oh, he's super smart. And then other ones would be like, he's a complete buffoon, you know. So it's interesting.
It is. Something I'd like to say from a personal point of view.
I hope Damo does it. He can't do no wrong.
That's true. No, what I would like to see is the refs making quicker decisions, particularly the video, and taking away those impromptu timeouts.
I thought they handled that situation really well. Like, I didn't think there was, like, a technical foul or anything. Like, it was like
the no call. Yeah, that was great. Yeah, like, but if they speed up the video review process, then you take away those impromptu timeouts, and
completely
you don't need to worry about it. Nick, we got a few questions from our Twitter fans towards you. This one from Taryn. Stellar start to the season, Nick. Keep it up. You've now played for and against the Red Army. How intimidating is the noise compared to other crowds in the NBL? Is it really a massive advantage?
Huge advantage. I've been playing for other teams, and you feel like you're finally getting on top of it, and then a steal or a turnover and a dunk, and suddenly you hear the whole 15,000 going up, and next thing you look up the scoreboard and you're down by 8 or 10 and you're like, where did that come from? But yeah, it's definitely great to have them on our side this time, and loving just playing in front of them because of it.
Can I want to elaborate on that a bit more. I mean, talk about that. I mean, being an opposition fan, like you, like we get up, and maybe not so much, but was it actual maybe increasing motivation? I know Illawarra didn't win here for like 20 times. Like, obviously you guys won here last year, unfortunately, but like, was that like an extra spice or element, you know, sort of, can you talk about that? What that win meant for, I guess, that group and that motivation coming into it, and even more so, was there sort of that, you know, oh, we're already down 10-0 here, like we could struggle to get back in this game. Was there sort of like that defeatist attitude, or how? Yeah, talk to us about that.
It's always tough coming back in Perth.
Yeah.
You do get down 10, and it feels so much more than 10 every time. But I think when you play on an opposition's home court, you always have that feeling if you can get up by 10 or something and you can start hearing those chairs fold and you know you've got a good win and they're leaving before the game's done.
Yeah.
And that's just that feeling you always wanted in Perth. And, I mean, that's why teams come and play so hard here, because if they can get that big road win against a Perth team, then it means that much more. So it's always extra motivation. That's why you get teams best when they come here. But it's even better, like, to have them behind you and supporting you, it makes it so much tougher to get that win at the same time.
Another question from Tim Rendelick, and I'll ask this one to both of you. What piece of advice has a coach given you in your career that you'll always remember? Nick, you got anything for me?
Every coach has something new and stuff, but probably the biggest thing I've learned is just be a master of something. Be a master of a certain skill, because at the end of the day, that's what's going to end up letting you play basketball as a career. Instead of trying to do everything really well, just be great at something. And I mean, that's
says a guy who does most things very, very well, probably better than
master
most
of all of them. Then
what would you say is your one word? What's your absolute strength that you try and do very well?
Rebounding.
Okay.
Especially offensive. I mean, just crashing that board every time. I don't get every time, but it's something that I learnt that's just a huge impact. And I'm sure
I was going to say, you guys are preaching from the same songbook there.
But it's just something that can be so deflating for a defensive team. They work their butt off for 24 seconds, then they get an offense, you get an offensive rebound, and then they go do it again. And it's a huge thing. And I love that feeling when you do get that board and make them play a minute worth of defense.
Yeah. Greg, anything from Bevo or Coach's Bra?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I guess it's where your career sort of transitioned. Like, I remember as a teenager, like, you sort of love those, know, if you, those mantras you see on YouTube where, like, sort of, oh, look, like, work, you know, there's someone out there working just as hard or harder than you, sort of thing. So that was a motivation as a young, naive kid that you sort of wanted to do, you know. And then I love what Nick said. That was huge for me. I remembered Sean Dennis was that sort of just stick to your strengths sort of thing. Like, at the end of the day, yeah, you want to add different tools to your game. Like, you do that as a professional and do that. But at the end of the day, there's a reason why you're contracted, or there's a reason why you're successful at the club. And never shy away from that. Like, we're both great rebounders, high work ethic guys. Yeah, I'm not an exceptional shooter or a ball handler. Like, I don't go, oh, all of a sudden I'm going to shoot 10 threes a game. Like, that goes away. And so that's been from my sort of career transition. It's doing that. It's funny, you know, like, yeah, we that same similar pathway. And I definitely respect that, because that was heaped onto me. And then when you talk about transition, I remembered, it's funny then, in one age, Martin Catalini, of all guys, he was a mentor of mine, I think my second or third year, and I sort of was asking him at that time, how do I get more minutes? You know, like, and I obviously had those chats with Bevo and all that sort of stuff, and you get that, oh, just play your game and all that sort of stuff. That doesn't help, you know, you're still trying to find out. And he sort of said, you know, Catalini sort of said to me, why... you know, when you're on, what are you trying to do? Like, are you doing anything good? And I said, no, I'm not making any mistakes, no turnovers. I'm running within the offense, doing all that sort of stuff. And he was like, yeah, exactly, but you're not doing anything right. And I was like, what do you mean by that? And he's like, you're not scoring. Like, that really, coaches want you to score and do all that sort of stuff, be an impact. So he said, let it fly, like, well, as soon as you're in the game. And I said, like, that's not really me. But he was like, okay, if you don't make a shot, you know, 2 or 3 minutes later, what's going to happen? I was like, I'll get subbed out. And he was like, if you miss a shot, what's going to happen? I was like, I'll get subbed out 2 or 3 minutes. He's like, and if you make a shot, what's going to happen? I was like, yeah, I'll play for 4 or 5 minutes. Yeah. And so that sort of, until I had built that trust within the coach, like with Bevo, I remember for like 3 or 4 weeks, yeah, I was super aggressive. Like, I would let it fly and, you know, and maybe be a bit more out of my comfort zone. And I was pretty confident. And then more and more minutes got up. And then I got to the point where, yeah, I was getting those minutes. And then I started taking those same shots, and Bevo was like, you don't need to do that. Like, just play within the system. I was like, no, I built my trust now, so I'm good. So it's, yeah, it's, I guess it's where you're at in your life, or sorry, your career transition, you know, like, it all varies. But yeah, I think coaches all have their sort of little things, but I think it's what resonates with you the most and really gets you a tick. But I think the biggest thing, and I can completely agree with Nick there, is, yeah, just stick to your strengths and, mm-hmm. and never let that, you know, forget about that.
The funny thing about that was SD for me as well. Yeah, so okay. It's funny how the same coaches and stuff for that.
Yeah. Big impact on both of you. Speaking of the early days of your career, Greg, I was thinking back to the last time an Australian NBA star was in town.
Yeah.
And that was 2011 when Patty Mills was playing a very brief stint with the Melbourne Tigers while the NBA lockout was on.
Pretty sure Trev may have been the coach, actually.
I think Trev might have coached that team. They came to Challenge Stadium one night. Yep. You guys did the job on them. There's actually a picture in our archives of you defending Paddy.
You've
got a great contest.
Yep.
I don't know if you know the picture. I'll send it to you after if you haven't seen it.
No, I've actually got it framed up because I got...
Do you?
Sure we're in the Heritage jersey, right? Like the white gold might be. But there's one I've got like framed up because I was like, yeah, sick, I'm playing Paddy Mills.
Yeah. It's a great contest. I dare say he probably hit the shot because he had like 25 or something that night. What do you remember about that night? Obviously a special occasion with a current NBA guy coming to town. Sure. Challenge Stadium was rocking that night. What do you remember about Paddy Mills' visit in 2011?
I think the build-up, obviously, was the lockout. So there was even talk of Bogut playing that year and all that sort of stuff, and the Paddy. And I think it's the same build-up is similar to what Bogut is. I think because, like, the Wildcat fan base, like, majority of people are NBA fans or, you know, are quite knowledgeable. I mean, everyone always preaches, oh, we've got the most knowledgeable fans. But, like, I think for the majority of Wildcat fans, like, they know who Andrew Bogut is, you know, like, because, you know, like, you might say... Yeah. Oh, look, Lamar Patterson, no disrespect to those guys or imports, like, for general population, they're like, oh, yeah, I'm not sure. It's just they're barracking for the Wildcats. Whereas I think, out of the 13,000 fans, like, 12.5 are like, Bogut is, you know, was in the NBA, won a championship, played with Steph Curry. Like, they all know that, you know. So, yeah, you're getting that similar. I'm getting the same general similar feels. Like, you can't lie and say you're not a little bit more pumped up for this. One, because we lost to him, like, and mm-hmm. and that. And for us, this is a huge game in terms of the ultimate outcome for the regular season standings towards, you know, for the end of the season. But, yeah, another, like, it... Bogut is the biggest name in the NBL right now, you know, and when he signed in the offseason, like, I was like, I, to be honest, I didn't think it was a possibility, like, come off season when it was sort of talk and didn't even, it sort of came out of nowhere. I was like, wow, like, you're getting a guy that isn't past his prime, like, and you're seeing that he's only getting better. And yeah, I think it's obviously a lot of hype. And yeah, as I said, I think, like, Big Gus and Big Tommy and even Nick, like, all these guys, our bigs, are going to be going against him. Like, one, because I think, you know, from us, and I said that on our last show, I thought we sort of disrespected, we gave him, like, Bogut too much respect. And I'm not trying to put that in a bad way, but yeah. And so I think these guys are going to try and redeem themselves a little bit. And it's nothing better than being in front of a home crowd who I know they're going to give him a serving, you know. So, there's a lot of nice little storylines, great matchups. And, yeah, you get up for these games. You get up for every game. But these ones, yeah, you're not going to lie and say, yeah, like, I'm going to be walking out, I guess, a little bit more pumped up for sure.
Yeah. Nick, I think with Bogues, the two, for me anyway, the two most underrated parts of his game are, one is passing, this court vision that he has. And also, it's easy to look at block shots shot numbers, but the number of shots that he changes, the number of shots that he has, an ability to impact. How much of a presence is he out there? How mindful are you of where he is when you're running your offense? How tough is that going up against him?
Yeah, he's phenomenal. Like, his ability to change shots was huge. I think that's a big reason we had our worst field goal shooting percentage against them last week. But we also didn't help ourselves. We didn't move the ball very well, which allowed him to stand in the key and affect shots. So I think we're going to do a better job this week moving that ball and really putting him in a few different situations where we can take advantage of him being out there and stuff. And if we play Wildcats basketball, we'll have a chance at it because of the way we move, because of the way we play and how hard we're going to play. So.
Yeah. Before we get into the crystal ball predictions, I've got to ask about your 17-year-old development player who scored his first bucket last week.
Yeah.
Greg, do you want to go tell me what his name is, first of all?
Mate, I would struggle with that. Wani Swaka Loka Waka or something.
Wani Swaka Loka Waka.
There you go.
What was his demeanour like around the team this week? You could see his eyes just lit up when Damo found him back door. He said afterwards he should have dunked it. He probably should have. How stoked were you guys for him, and what was he like this week after that?
Oh, mate. To be honest, I mean, he's quite a young – very quiet guy anyway. So.
Okay.
Hasn't really been puffing his chest around. It's crazy. A lot of guys, the very first game they ever suit up, they usually get on due to like a blowout, and then they have an opportunity, like Lockie Cummings last year scores and has that situation with Brendan Tees. And, even I remember my very first game ever suiting up, we were up New Zealand and I got an opportunity to shoot a three. So I was like leading the league in 3-point percentage for like a while. Yeah. But because I was a development player, my photo was just of a blank like canvas. So I was like, so that was me for like half the year.
Just a silhouette with a question. Silhouette.
Right, but so it was cool, and obviously I didn't see the play drawn up, but as soon as I saw the handoff, like I was like, I know exactly what Damo's doing here, and it was perfect for him.
We've seen that play a couple of times,
mate. Like, usually it's like for Casey or an import. So it was cool, and that was the loudest I heard the crowd all night. Yeah. So like to see them, it was good. I think he was a bit overawed, but like sort of the next week, like obviously he saw that. We had a bit of a joke, wondering how many Instagram followers he got. I think Nick was saying it was like 400 increase overnight or something.
Okay.
Like. So you look at that. But then even the next week, he would have been like being pumped over the weekend. And then, they still Monday media were there. He had a newspaper article and all that sort of stuff. So it was cool for him. Yeah. And, for a guy that's grown up in Perth, I'm sure there was a time where he was obviously always wanted to play for Walkers, and he's got ambitions to play in the NBA. I think what kid gets the opportunity to play at 17 years old? Yeah. Like, not even legal.
That's true.
It's crazy. Like, he didn't drive to the game. Like, it makes me, like, I mean, I still feel like, obviously, I'm the older guy on the team, but you're sort of like, this is crazy, like that sort of stuff. So, it's awesome. It's, those storylines are pretty cool, especially in a game like that, to give him the opportunity. And you would have seen the excitement around the guys. It's always nice to be able to do that, and it's always cool.
No doubt. Nick, what do you remember about your first points as a professional? Do you remember your first points as a professional? What do you got? What happened?
I was happy to be on the court, really, and got lucky with a little little layup type thing. So, I just, on Wani, it's unbelievable. 17, and I can't even imagine training against NBL players at that age, and for him to go out there and score in an actual game against a different team, it just shows the confidence of the kid. And, I mean, he's been so modest all week. He's just come back in this week. He's just working hard again and just waiting for his next opportunity. So it's just great of the kid, and hopefully he keeps going because he's got a lot of potential.
Yep, and real potential to be a cult figure, fan favourite for the Wildcats. Crystal ball time, something that we predict, Nick, for the week ahead. I'm looking to tomorrow night's game. I think you're going to see a battle royale within the battle. Bryce Cotton and Jerome Randall going up against each other. I think one of them's going to score 30+.
Oh, there we go.
And whoever does
gets
will
a win.
Walk away with the win tomorrow night.
Fair enough.
I just think both of those guys are going to be licking their chops.
Yep.
The bright lights are on. Massive stage.
Pork chops according to Gus.
Well played. I think that's what's going to go down. Greg, what do you got?
Well, how did we go last week? Shocking, right?
Last week, I forgot to say last week, you called for a big game from Jesse against Sydney, which didn't quite happen.
Yeah.
I said a corner three from Jared Kenny. He almost hit one in front of your bench.
I know.
That sort of half rattled in and half rattled out.
He came to my house later that night, and I was like, you nearly had a corner three, and he said in his head there were so many things he was going to be saying to our bench as he was running down the court, but he missed
spot
it.
For him.
But crystal ball. I'm going to go here, and this is, I mean, because it's the last show of the year.
It is.
So I'm going to say we're going to finish out this little road trip 4-0. Really book it. Wow. Yeah, that's a big one. It's a big one. But
so this weekend's double.
Well, and Melbourne, then Sydney, and then I think Brisbane and Illawarra. Yep. So you're playing the top four teams plus, well, actually, yeah, Illawarra is top four over now, right?
The top four teams other than yourself. Yeah,
yeah, so there you go. That's huge.
That's putting if the I heat get
that,
on the team.
If I get that, that's...
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Nick, you got anything for us?
I'm going to keep it pretty simple. Nordo falls over six times.
Yeah, how many times?
Six plus.
Okay, are you checking that? You better be.
Watch that one.
I'll count that. I'll keep a tally.
That's playing $1, I reckon, Nordo. Or he's shooting short on a three.
Do you guys give him a bit of stick about falling over?
Oh, yeah. I think, I don't know what he does, but he just can't stay on his feet. So if he's not at six, I might have to trip him over a couple of times, but we'll get there.
We'll keep an eye on that towards the end of the game. Hey, Nick, thanks so much for coming in. Pleasure having you on the podcast, and best of luck for the weekend ahead.
Cheers, mate. Lovely to be here. Love today.
Greg, we're taking a couple of weeks off. Enjoy the Christmas break and the New Year break. We might be back just before New Year. We'll check with that. But again, best of luck for the double.
Thank you, mate. 4-0, Christmas shirts all around. We'll be good to go.
And to our readers, stay tuned to Perth Now and the West. We'll see you next time.
The Dribble Podcast is brought to you by Perth Now, your home of sporting action from home and abroad.